What if God was one of us? So saying Joan Osborne, what if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on a bus trying to make his way home. Now, not probably one of the greatest songs of all time, but it's an interesting question, isn't it? What if God was one of us? What would it look like? How would we respond? What would it mean if God was one of us? Well, people have thought about that question throughout the ages, and most of the time when people think about God becoming a human being, they think of something like this. Does anyone know who this is? Kevin Sorbo, yes. As Hercules in Hercules, The Legendary Journeys or something like that. A TV show that I used to watch sometimes. When I think of Hercules, I think of Kevin Sorbo. But you may think of Disney Hercules. Or if you're even more recent than that, you may think of The Rock Hercules, Dwayne Johnson. Different takes on Hercules throughout film and television. This is usually what people have thought throughout history when they think of God as a man. Someone with kind of superhuman strength, superhuman ability, kind of just like us, but just beefed up a bit, a bit stronger, a bit more impressive. But what's interesting is you watch any of these movies, well, actually, I haven't watched all of them, but I read the synopsis on Wikipedia. So I expect what you will understand as you watch these, any of these, which is the same as what the ancient Greeks thought about Hercules when they told the stories of him way back then, was that he, even though he had some of these great qualities, he still had these difficulties that went along with it. He had some of the weaknesses of humanity intertwined. And he always seemed to be overcoming this difficulty, trying to sort out his own personal quest to discover who he was, what his relationship was like with the gods, what his relationship should be like with people, because he didn't really fit in either category. It was this kind of personal journey. As Christians, and as we read John 1, we see this very idea, God becoming one of us. Verse 14, didn't we? I hope you've still got it in front of you. Verse 14 says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The Word, the divine Son, becomes flesh. It's what we as Christians call the incarnation. It's a word, incarnation. You can break it up for you. Incarnation. You still may not understand what it means. Here's the way to remember it. Do you know what this is? Chili con carne, yes. Which means chili with meat. The carne is the meat. It's Spanish. Which comes from the Latin, which is where we get incarnation from. But it's in meat-ation. That's what it's talking about. It's becoming flesh. Sometimes the Bible talks about flesh as kind of like our sinfulness, but here it's just talking about our meatiness, our bodiliness. The Word became flesh. Jesus, the divine Son of God from eternity, stepped into our world as a human being. Now, this is massive. This is earth-changing. God takes on humanity and he makes his dwelling among us. The Word, he's still fully God, but now at the same time he's fully man. Now, Christians throughout the ages have wrestled with just this, how this works, how you get fully God and fully man, and particularly they're trying to answer the questions, what was going on in Jesus' head as he was kind of like, how did it all work out? Did he have a God mind and a human mind? Or were they the one mind, and all these different ideas? And there's some interesting questions there. But as we read John, and he's teaching us about this massive, massive thing, the incarnation, they aren't the questions that he's asking. They aren't the questions that he is answering. He's much more concerned to tell us about the results of what happens because Jesus has become flesh, and why it's important. And that's what we're going to look at tonight. And as we do it, surprisingly, it addresses exactly the questions that Joan Osborne raised in her song. And so we're going to use that as our outline. This is where we're going. Just a slob, just a stranger, just trying to make his way home. So you can follow along in your booklets. And also, note special tonight, there's a chance for you to fill in the blanks. There's some spaces as we go through. You can fill in the blanks under each point. So the first thing that we see, the first thing that John wants us to think about is the question, when Jesus becomes flesh, when he takes on human body, is it somehow degrading so that he's really unimpressive? He's just like anyone else when we look around. Is he just like some other slob that we wouldn't even know? Does he just kind of blend in? Well, as we read on in verse 14, it's pretty clear that's not the case, isn't it? See, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. That Jesus comes in the flesh as a human being, but he doesn't just kind of blend in. There's something different about him. He is glorious. And John is able to say, we and the other disciples have seen his glory. How has he seen it? Oh, you might like to fill in the blanks. Can you guess here? We have seen his glory.
Excellent.
How has John seen his glory? Well, as we keep reading, and we'll look at it in due course when we get to it, here's a little bit of preview, how John sees his glory. In chapter 2, after Jesus turns water into wine, John says this in verse 11, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. Jesus did signs through which he revealed his glory. Now, that's the first one that I would think about, even without kind of reading through it. I think Jesus did some impressive, miraculous things. That's glorious. That puts him as a stand apart, different from everyone else. But that's not the only place where John tells us about Jesus' glory being shown. As we keep reading in chapter 12, we read these words. He quotes from the Old Testament, from the prophet Isaiah, who says this, he has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, so they can neither see me with their eyes, nor understand with their hearts, nor turn, and I would heal them. Isaiah said this because he saw Jesus' glory and spoke about him. John's saying that Jesus' glory was seen by Isaiah, not in miracles at this point, in doing signs, but in the fact that he's rejected, that people's eyes are blind to him, that they don't understand him. This is something that shows his glory. And it's not the one that I would immediately think of. We don't think of kind of like people saying, no, Jesus, not interested, as being something that reveals his glory. But it does, because it shows the fulfillment of what God has said. And because it's also the same way that they've continually treated God. It's him being categorized with God, being treated in the same way. And as we keep reading on, we get to finally chapter 17. which is really the glory chapter of John. Chapter 17 is just a prayer of Jesus before he goes to the cross. And he keeps bringing up this idea of glory. And he prays to the Father. He says, give me the glory that I had with you before the world began. And he prays that his glory might be shared with the disciples, that they may have a share in the glory. And he says that there is glory in him finishing the work that he has come to do. And he's praying this before, the night before he goes to the cross. Looking forward to, looking ahead to, being executed. Being handed over. Jesus is thinking about glory. It's no accident. The cross is the place where we see and where John saw Jesus' glory most clearly. Not in the way we normally expect, but in the reverse, in being humiliated, in being shamed, treated like a criminal. God come in the flesh shows us true glory. Glory of service. Glory of sacrifice. Glory of love. That's there we see it most clearly of all. Now, I don't know about you, we live in a world where people kind of are quick to dismiss the claims we have about Jesus. They're quick to kind of say, no, I don't want to kind of like believe what's in the Bible. I want to see God for myself. I want to see a sign. Well, they want something glorious, don't they? They want something that will make them sit back and go, wow, yeah, that's a bit different from my everyday experience. I want to see something impressive. And sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that way too. We can want to see something impressive to root our faith in. But as we read this and we see John and the disciples have seen his glory, we should be quick to remember that the glory has already been shown for us. Jesus has already made it clear. We shouldn't be looking for it to come again. We should turn to John and read. We have seen his glory. Jesus in the flesh. You know what else? It doesn't stop with glory. But Jesus reveals much more than that. See, God, as a human being, didn't come to be a stranger on a bus. Just to kind of keep private. But John tells us that Jesus came in the flesh to reveal, to show us what he's like. Have a look at verse 18 with me. John writes, no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. Now, Jesus comes in the flesh not to be a stranger, but to reveal, to make the Father known. So that we can relate to him. We've got to know what he's like to have a true relationship, don't we? If you're filling in the blanks. The one and only Son has made him known. See, God the Father is invisible. He doesn't have a body. He's not part of the created world that we know, where everything you can touch and feel and everything's made up of atoms and it's physical. We can't see him. Sometimes we can see what he does by its effects. But it's not the same as seeing him. And no one has seen God, John tells us. No one knows truly what he's like. In the same way that we know each other, because we meet each other face to face. But there is one, the one and only Son, who has that close relationship with the Father already, who's had it in eternity past. He's the one who can make him known. But in order for him to be able to make it known to human beings, to us, in that face-to-face way, he takes flesh. He gets meatified. He's the only one that can do it, and he does. He makes the Father known. What does he make known about God when Jesus comes? Well, as we read through John, we'll see heaps and heaps. But what do we see right here? What does John tell us? Well, the first thing, he tells us that there's a Father and a Son. That God is in relationship. And as we keep reading, we see the full picture involves not just two, but three persons, the Trinity. And this is massive, for Jesus to come and reveal this to us. There's hints about it in the Old Testament, but nothing that enabled people to understand and go, oh yeah, God's a Trinity. Jesus shows us this. And he also shows us a bit of the character of God. John tells us about it here twice. I don't know if you noticed. Back in verse 14. And again in verse 17. That in Jesus comes grace and truth. Grace and truth. We like to imagine God, us as in human beings. We like to imagine God in the kind of Hercules way, like us, but bigger and unlimited by the things that we're limited by. And so we think God's going to have unlimited power and unlimited knowledge and unlimited space. It doesn't just kind of sit in one spot. He's everywhere. And some of those things, unlimited life. And then we end up thinking these ways and these big ways of thinking. There's some truth in those, but that's not the foundational thing for understanding God. And actually, if we keep thinking like that, it leads us to ask the wrong kinds of questions. It leads us to ask the questions like, can God make a rock so big that he can't build it, that he can't lift it? That's kind of a bit absurd. But it's not really helpful in understanding God. And sometimes it makes us think about things and we form these ideas of what God is like. And we think, well, God is God. He's the source of all life. And so he can't die. That just doesn't fit with the God category. We have to remember that if we want to know and understand God, we have to come back to Jesus. Jesus who comes as a man, who taking on humanity also takes on mortality and is able to die. Now this is a huge point for us in the way that we think about doing, remember from last week's, theology, thinking about God. So when we think about God, it's dangerous to start with our own imagination. Kind of just imagine God as kind of like us but bigger. If we want to understand God, we've got to keep coming back to where God shows us what he's like. Jesus. Again and again, theology is centered on Jesus. And at the heart of it, the heart of what God is like, the first thing that we're going to build all our other things, our other ideas about God, is Trinity. God in relationship. surprising. It's different to what we see in other religions, other thinking about God around the world. But it's really important because it's what makes our theology, our thinking about God, different. And it's important because it helps us understand what God does and why he does it a bit more. See, God, because God is Trinity, because relationship is a part of who he is, it's also a part of what he wants in us. He doesn't want to be God at a distance, but he wants to be God in relationship. And so, get to the third point. Is God, like one of us, just trying to make his way home? Here as a man, but just got his own agenda, sorting out his own things, getting his life in order, on his personal quest to self-discovery. Well, that's not what we see in the Word become flesh, is it? See, what we see in verse 16 is that out of his fullness, out of the fullness of this Word become flesh dwelling among us, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. He's not just trying to make his own way home. His purpose involves us. And it's about relationship with us. Now, it's summarized here as we've all received grace. This is free gift. Something we don't deserve. And it's grace in place of grace already given. It's like he's giving us an upgrade on the previous model. And what's he talking about? This grace upon grace? Gift in place of a gift that was already given? Well, he explained it in the very next verse. Keep reading verse 17. It says, "For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." The law was given through Moses. That's the first grace. What was it? Moses is the one who led the people of Israel out of Egypt through the Red Sea as God made the waters part and into the desert where he gave them the law, the Ten Commandments and all the other rules that went with it, that explained how Israel were to be God's people, how they were to be in relationship with God. That's the grace that was already given. But there was a problem in that the people didn't follow it. The people didn't live as God's people. They disregarded the law. They ignored the law and they forgot about it. And if you keep reading, just about the whole Old Testament is a story about how God's people, Israel, don't want to act and live and be his people. And so in place of that grace, in Jesus, there is a new grace given. It comes out of his fullness. In place of that previous way of people relating to God, there's a new way of people relating to God. And it's in grace and truth. It's a gift. It's something we don't deserve. We shouldn't be able to relate to God because we've stuffed it up. We're sinful. We fall short. We're not good enough. None of us. But because of Jesus, we're given it as a gift, this relationship. And it's a relationship in truth. It's not like the law in Moses was false, and this is truth. It's more about pointing out the idea that the law that was given through Moses was just a shadow pointing to the real thing that was coming in Jesus, the real relationship. Permanent way of us being right with God. And Jesus did this as a human being. He comes and makes this way for us to be right with God. And we know, as we read the story, we know where it's going. He does it as a human being by dying. Dying in our place. Bringing us peace. As we sung before, it's bringing reconciliation to a world that longs to know the affections of a father that will never let them go. God is committed to a relationship with people. And so Jesus' purpose in coming as man is to die as man in the place of people like you and I. To bring us relationship with God, peace, reconciliation. He hasn't come just to try and make his own way home. He's come to make our way home. That's at the heart of Jesus becoming flesh. Jesus coming for us. When we understand this, when we think about the incarnation, this idea of Jesus taking on body, taking on humanity, we keep seeing that it points to the cross. He does it for us. And as we think about it, we can't just kind of think these ideas and take it or leave it. It's not just stuff for our mind, but it's stuff for our whole life. It's stuff for transforming who we are. Jesus came in the flesh to bring us relationship with God, to make our way home. It's there for us if we want it. It's there for you if you want that right relationship with God. If you want that way back home. Calls for a response. Well, friends, I think asking what if God was one of us is a helpful question for us to think through, but actually, it's the wrong question, isn't it? There's no what if about it. God was one of us, and Jesus still is one of us. He's still human. But perhaps a more important question for us to think about as we conclude is, what if God wasn't one of us? Imagine what we'd be lacking. If John couldn't say, we've seen his glory, we haven't seen his glory. If the one and only Son has not made him known, if out of his fullness we haven't all received grace. What if God wasn't one of us? Thankfully, he was. How about I give thanks right now for that reality, that truth that we see in John, in Jesus. Our great Father, we thank you for the amazing truth of the incarnation, that Jesus became human being. Thank you that he took on our flesh, that he dwelt among us. Thank you that he showed his glory. Thank you that he made you known. Thanks that we can have a glimpse of the the wonder of Trinity, because Jesus has come as one of us to make you known. And Father, thank you so much that he's come to make us a way home. Us sinners, undeserving, rebellious people who fall again and again. I thank you that you still want relationship with us. And thank you that in Jesus becoming flesh, we are able to receive grace out of his fullness. We're able to have a relationship with you. We're able to have a way back home. Father, please help us to appreciate more and more this great truth of the incarnation. Please bring more and more glory to Jesus through us as we understand it. We pray it in his name. Amen.